Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Special show today that we've got our special guests today, as well as the chief host is going to be Recita De Jesus. So before I go on, let me bring her on. Sifu, are you with us? And welcome to your show.
I am here. I am. I know this is kind of weird. It's kind of like, for the listeners out there, usually when we do the intro, I'm usually the one that talks first. And I'm like, I just sit there and literally mute my own mic so I didn't, like, talk out of habit.
You know, it was really funny. You kept posting all week how I'm going to be a guest on my own show. I thought, I kept thinking, wow, does that mean she's going to be talking to herself?
Pretty much. I guess I have to talk more as far as a guest as opposed to a host, but yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people are going to be calling in. A lot of people are going to be on the chat board today. It's going to be quite an interesting show. You know, I give people a hard time all the time, constantly, and now I'm just going to take it to a new level today.
That's awesome.
So I heard you had some really bad weather yesterday. How's the weather now up in Seattle?
Well, right now, it's okay. However, on the radio this morning, there's actually a high wind advisory. So what happened yesterday, I sent you that picture of that big old system that's coming in that looks like a hurricane. It's still coming in. So we're going to be hit with round two tonight. So the high winds are going to start at around like between 6 and 7 or something like that, between 5 and 7 p.m., so the high winds are going to kick in, as well as heavy, heavy rain. So it's going to be interesting. I better go find the ark.
Yeah, exactly. You showed me the pictures of the rain coming down. I was like, oh, my God. And I love the rain. I love to sit outside under my patio to just watch it rain.
Right.
But not like that. No, I don't like
that.
Yeah,
it was crazy. It was crazy. I mean, I like a good thunderstorm and, you know, the hail and the rain and stuff, but it was all day. So, you know, it would be like someone slid open a cloud for like 20 minutes, and then it would, you know, kind of like stop a little bit and turn into regular rain, and then it would happen again for 15 minutes, and it would go back to regular rain, and then it would like it just over and over all day. And and I have to say this to the listeners out there. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, Seattleites, we live in Seattle, but don't get too overconfident. Don't be stupid, because I hit a big puddle yesterday, and it literally like picked up my car and shoved me onto the sidewalk and completely messed up my front end. So it's be careful out there, because, you know, if you're going like, I was only going like 45 miles an hour, and I hit this huge puddle, and it basically like stopped me, and I, you know, turned the steering wheel, and I just went boop, you know, over the sidewalk. But if you're on the freeway and you hit a puddle on only one side of your, you know, one side of your wheels or something like that, that's going to spin you. We've already seen people spun out. There were a couple of freeways where they had to close a few lanes because people would spin out and smash into barriers and stuff like that because people were just being stupid. So, you know, drive carefully out there, everybody.
Absolutely. Now, so a couple things happened this week. It's sort of funny. One part of it's sort of sad. You know, my father-in-law has Alzheimer's really bad. So but once a month, my wife goes up and takes care of him and gives her brother a break because her brother's living with him right now and commuting an hour to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
So just before she leaves, she puts this laundry in the washer, and she says, okay, I need you to take it out of the washer, put it in the dryer. I said, okay, no problem. So I pick her up on Friday. She's only there for a day. And she says at the end of the day, is the laundry done? So she's buzzing my chops about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about it for a second, and I went, oh, my God. You just told me to put the laundry in the dryer. You didn't tell me to turn the dryer on. And she flipped out.
How long was it sitting in there?
Me.
How long was it sitting in there?
Oh, it was done. It was in the dryer. I turned the dryer on and ran it through the cycle.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't want her to know that.
Oh, I see. Because, I've done that. It's like, oh, my God. And then I forget about it. And then, like, 2 days later, it smells like mildew. And, yeah.
Right, yeah. And then last night, you know, I don't know if you saw it, I posted a picture of my dog, Hayden, laying outside mm-hmm. and captioned it, "My poor dog, she worked so hard." Well, I had a couple comments, you know, from one of your students and one of actually Kikoi Kanyete's students and my niece. Well, my mm-hmm. niece said, you know, "Do you want another one?" And I said, "Well, I would if my dog wouldn't eat them." Because, you know, my dog just doesn't play nice.
Uh-huh.
And I told my wife this last night. And she says, "Is she still dating the old guy?" And I'm going, "Okay, this guy's older than she is, yes. And he looks a little mm-hmm. older than he looks because he's got a full beard. But he's still got uh-huh. all his hair, all still dark." And I'm thinking about it, I'm going, "Honey, do you realize that guy's like 15 or 20 years younger than I am?"
Mm-hmm.
And she called this guy old.
An old man.
So, enough bantering. Let's get on with the show. First off, people, we have birthdays.
Yes, birthdays.
This week, we have my sister-in-law, Pamela Deal, which has her birthday today. We have Master Al Leong is having his birthday on the 30th. Mm-hmm. Eric Thompson, which was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011, the same year you mm-hmm. were, he's having his birthday on the 3rd. A good friend of ours, his daughter, Chelsea Wooldridge, which is the daughter of Sophie Greg Wooldridge, she's also having her birthday on the 3rd. We have mm-hmm. a local girl to me, Michelle Sandy, which is a, now you never got to meet him, I took you to, but he was gone. One of Don Baird's students is having her birthday on the 3rd. A good friend of the show, Dana Abbott, is having his birthday on the 5th. And Victoria Vibes, which is Vibes with a V, not a B, is having her birthday on the 5th. She's a fitness instructor here in the Los Angeles area. And I understand you have somebody who's having a birthday as well.
Yeah. In fact, I actually want to send a shout out to Mr. Jerry Hossam. He is a well-known knife and blade maker. And if I remember correctly, has made some custom blades for Ray Dionaldo, if I remember correctly, a Kali practitioner, and a few other Filipino martial arts masters out there. Wonderful blades. I'm saving up my nickels and dimes to try and get one from him. But his birthday is tomorrow. But while I have my birthday list up, I just want to send a shout out to all of my other Facebook friends. And I might as well, even though I don't know half of them, but I'm going to anyway. So here's a birthday shout out to Sifu Kevin Hufford, another martial artist named, I'm going to try not to mess up his name, Francisco Luis Figueiredo Lugo. I think I did that right. I also want to wish a happy birthday to Premier Martial Arts Olympia here in Olympia, Washington, the capital of Washington. And I'm not quite sure if it's the school's birthday or if it's the chief instructor's birthday. But regardless, happy birthday, Premier Martial Arts in Olympia. And there's another friend on Facebook, and I cannot say his name. It looks like Hussein Rebsuo, and I know I'm getting that right wrong. Birthday shout out to Jose Francisco. Another shout out to Joseph Martinez. Shout out to Azteca Dragon Rojo, so the Aztec Red Dragon. Denden Simaringa, happy birthday. A previous student of mine, Vince Maurer. And that's it. And of course, happy birthday to Jerry Hossam. So for everyone out there that is having a birthday this week, here's a special tune for you. Assuming that it goes. There we go.
Now, we're going to go right into shout-outs with that, because we do have a long list of things to do on the show today.
Right.
I will be judging a tournament next weekend in the city of Glendale. This is the 49th Kubota Annual All-Star Karate Championship by Soki Takabota. It's going to be in Glendale at Occidental College, 1600 Campus Road, Los Angeles, California. In the Rush Gym. If you're in the Glendale area, Burbank, L.A., and would like to attend, I look forward to seeing you there. Now, I have another shout-out going out to Cijo Douglas Wong. He is having a seminar in the Tijuana, Mexico area. So if you're down in Tijuana area, or if you're in San Diego and can make the drive over the border, great instructor, longtime friend, great friend of the show. Contact him on Facebook, and if you want any more details on it. Now, this has been an interesting week, Sifu. We've done some training for people who want their own show on the Seiken Network. Why don't you talk a little bit about them before we go on?
Yes. Now, before I get on with announcing some of our new Seiken Network hosts and upcoming shows and stuff, I just wanted to let our listeners know that when me and Sifu Bob set up this network, we were initially under the impression that we would just be doing this ourselves. But, you know, after seeing the impact that the show has made, unbeknownst to me and you, I mean, it's been a surprise over the last almost a year that we're actually making an impact with bringing the martial arts community together, as opposed to, promoting like a sense of separatedness, like my style is better than your style, or we're only going to do stuff for Keiji Kembo, or we're only going to do stuff for JKD, and you had gotten some emails from people on Facebook that said, hey, it's a great show. We really love what you guys are doing, bringing people together and stuff. I've gotten a few emails. And, after seeing this kind of impact and realizing that, even if we just touch one person with the show, then we've done our job pretty much, right? And that's all we've ever really wanted to do. So, I thought, well, let's go ahead and see if we can get other people on the network under the Seiken Network banner that, follow kind of like the same mindset and want to spread that same kind of message. So about a couple weeks ago, I sent out a shout out saying, hey, if anyone wants to have a radio show, their own radio show under the Seiken Network banner, let me know. Well, that day, like not even an hour after I posted that, I get like 7 requests saying, can you tell me a bit more about this? And I was like, oh, crap. That's a lot of people, right?
Right.
Considering that we can really only have 7 shows under our network, right? So I'm like, oh, man. But with that said, we, over the last couple weeks, have brought in a brand new show. It's called the Violet Reiki Radio Show. It's a talk radio show about the spiritual practice of Reiki, and it's hosted by Rose Jimenez, who was one of my first friends here on Facebook, a wonderful soul, wonderful person, great Reiki master, and her show is going to be talking about not only Reiki amongst experienced Reiki practitioners, but Also talking in layman's terms about what Reiki is and what it's not. And she airs her show every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And her inaugural show was this past Thursday. And it went really well. Well, with just a couple glitches, like I completely forgot to change her startup audio, but that's okay. So just, you know, there's just a couple things to iron out, but she had a great first show. She had 44, she had 44 listens that night, just that night. And two or three people, I think, I don't remember, two or three people that called in. And I thought, wow, that's really good for a first show. So congratulations, Rose. Hope you're listening. All right. And we also are in the process of training four other hosts. So, and we don't know when the air date is going to be for these particular new shows, but definitely these new hosts are showing the interest and are really excited about the prospect of having their own show. We have the, we hope to have I don't know if I want to say the name of the show quite yet, because I want to make sure everybody has the names of their show all put together for sure in their heads. But we have April Vidal, who is hopefully going to be a new show host. And we hope to have her show airing on Fridays during the morning hours. We're still trying to set that up and getting her more training and more test shows to practice and stuff like that. And we really look forward to her show. I'm not going to give away any cool details, but trust me, listeners, it's going to be a fun, fun show. And I really suggest that you guys listen in to April Vidal's show when we go on the air with that. We also have Harry and Robin Shivery, who will be debuting their show. I'm not quite sure of a date. We're looking at sometime toward the end of October. But they're going to have a show that's going to be dealing with motivation, self-improvement, and marketing. So that's going to be a very informative show as well. And the hosts are Harry and Robert Shivery. And they're undergoing... Shivery. Yeah, Robin. Did I say Robert? Robin. Yeah. Sorry, Robin. And I almost called her Karma the other day because that's how she labeled her phone line. But oh well. But that's going to be a really fun show too. So if you're a martial artist, excuse me, if you're a martial artist and you're interested in all things motivational, self-improvement, marketing, that kind of thing, do check out their show, because Harry is a martial artist as well. So he knows where we're coming from. He's not, you know, looking at all this from the outside looking in. You know, he's right there with us. And we also have another show from my sister in the martial arts, Jules. She's kind of like my sister in the Kajikembo One Hopkendo field. And we've known each other quite a long time, even before Facebook. I met her at One Hop Kendo events long time ago, and I didn't quite know who she was until she explained herself on Facebook when we became friends. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's you, because back then I only knew her as Hey Sis. That was it. So Jules is gonna have her show as well, and that's really gonna be a great show because she's connected with all of the Kajikembo and One Hop Kendo people all over the world. And she's going to open up her show that's going to be sort of like ours, and really focusing on the international aspects of the martial arts. So, keep your eyes open, folks, for Jules' show, because there will be times where the Dynamic Dojo radio show and Jules' show is going to be simulcasting. And the tentative title for Jules' show is Talk Story with Jules. So it'll be very cool, very cool. So those are the shows that we have. We have a couple of other people that are thinking about having their own show. We've got a life coach that wants to have their own show, possibly a yoga instructor in the future. But we'll see how those go. We'll just keep days open for them and hope for the best. So, yay. So Seika Network is expanding. And I think we have only one, well, two more spots left. So if there's anyone out there that wants their own show, get a hold of us on the Dynamic Dojo radio show page on Facebook, and me and Sifu Bob will help you out with that. All right. That's it for the new shows. We're pretty excited.
I'm stoked. We spent a lot of time training on the studio board. These people are stoked about coming on board with us. We're expanding, we're growing, we're having a good time doing it too. Now, what have you got? We're going to move on to our next segment. What have you got for the health news? Now, play the intro.
The health news. Yeah. That was a great hint there. Now I got to find it. Oh, here we go. Okay, health news. All right. Now, we know these days that a lot of people are popping on the health and fitness bandwagon. Everyone's thinking about what they eat and keeping their weight down, because we know that keeping healthy, keeping your weight down, watching what you eat really does play a part in prolonging your life. The United States has one of the highest rates of obesity and obesity-related diseases such as heart disease, like cholesterol, diabetes, all that other kind of stuff. So we wanted to put this up just as a few tips to help people lose weight. Now, there are, 100 of these points? I'm not going to read them all. I'm just going to read 10 of them. But if I remember correctly, the link is posted on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, so you can read all 100 of them. Am I right about that, Sifu Bob, that the link is on the page now?
There's no link. I just listed them all.
Oh,
I just did a
okay.
Cut paste over the site.
Oh, okay, cool. So go check that out on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. But here are Dr. Oz's, 100 weight loss tips, but Rusty's only going to read 10. Number one, automate your eating by planning your meals ahead of time. That way you're less likely to make an unhealthy last-minute food choice. Now, that sounds like a lot of work, folks, but if you are serious about losing weight, do plan them. That way you have something that you have to be responsible for. Now, I remember about 10 years ago, would you believe I made it up to almost 140 pounds at one point, Bob? 140 pounds. And that was just unhealthy eating. That was during the point in time where I was down for the count for 2 years because I'd injured my back. So there was really nothing I could do to work out. Except for try to do Tai Chi and then lay down in pain, right?
Right.
And I gained a lot of weight, at least for my little frame, almost 140 pounds. That's ridiculous. My knees hurt and it was bad. So I said, screw it, I'm going to lose this weight. And I actually had to plan my meals. I planned my meals and I sent this list to one friend and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to be having this week. And you're going to check up on me. And it worked out fine because now I was responsible for it. And if I cheated, I had to own up to it. And I wasn't going to let that happen. So it does help you guys get a list, plan your meals, instill the help of a friend and be responsible for it. That way, you own up to it. So I really got to speak volumes about that first one. So, okay, number two. Oats are your friends. Eating a cup of oatmeal in the morning will prevent you from gorging in the afternoon. Now, I have to talk about this also because my mom eats a lot of oatmeal, and I also eat a lot of hot grain cereal and stuff. Not only are oats good for your heart, but, I tend to eat an oat, flax, and millet type of a hot cereal, and it's great. You can personalize your bowl of hot cereal any way you want. It fills you up, but it doesn't slow you down. And remember, you want that breakfast first thing in the morning to be what starts your day and kickstart your metabolism. All right. Number three, foods with healthy fats such as olives, salmon, and walnuts help keep you satisfied. So if you're going to find a snack, forgo the Snickers, go with the foods with healthy fats. Number four, skipping meals can cause your body to go into a fat-storing starvation mode, making it harder to burn calories. And that's a well-known fact, everybody, but a lot of people kind of forget that. They think, well, I'm just going to eat tonight and I'm just going to keep working out. I'm going to lose weight that way. Well, with some people that might work, it worked for me when I was younger, but then there comes that point where your metabolism won't do that anymore. So, you know, your body will store the fat if you skip meals. Better to eat or graze, as a lot of people call it, all throughout the day to keep your metabolism burning calories, not hoarding calories. All right. Number five, go nuts with nuts. Did I read that right? I did. Go nuts with nuts. Eating a handful of nuts will help you stay full. Try soaking them in water for a different texture. Number six, use meditation to help you cope with chronic stress, which can use meditation to help you cope with chronic stress, which can lead you to crave the feel-good carbs. And I've been a big supporter of meditation, but on the other hand, I've been met with a lot of kind of like passive resistance to it. You know, like, oh, I don't have time to meditate. Oh, I don't have the patience to meditate. And I think that's only because people have a stereotype about meditating. So, you know, you guys, if you have any questions about meditating, you know, get on the internet or ask me about it. It's really not all that hard. And trust me, it helps. Okay, number seven. You may be used to fried foods, but there are other, most times healthier, ways to cook, including roasting, steaming, poaching, baking, braising, and broiling. I love fried foods as much as the next person, but you know, I've luckily, thank goodness, I've been thinking a lot about what I eat and my health because of my mom. My mom's really been watching her diet for the last 10-20 years because of cancer, and just in the last 5 years, I've been really watching what I eat. So do try roasting, steaming, poaching, baking, braising, and broiling. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Because it is a lot more healthier for you. Just in the last year, I think I've only had fried foods here at home maybe twice, and that was during parties. All the other times we do a lot of steaming, baking, roasting, and broiling. So do that, folks. Okay, number eight. Do your grocery shopping with a list and a time limit. That way you're less likely to stray into the processed food sections. Now, we've all done that, right? Where you like go into a store and you're hungry. Well, that's stupid. That can mess up everything. All right, number nine. Don't confuse thirst with hunger. Drink a glass of water when you feel hungry to see if that's what you're really craving. And last but not least, out of this particular short list is number 10. When out at a restaurant, ask the server to hold the bread, snack mix, chips or salsa, or any of that usual already on your table stuff that might come before the meal. If you're hungry, you'll be tempted. That, you know, it, unfortunately, that's kind of, I can't seem to not get past the chips and the peppers at the Mexican restaurant that we normally go to after class. They always have it there. And they see us walk in, and they automatically know those guys want onions and peppers. And they just set them out in front of us, and we're, like, eating and eating. And then finally, when we get our food, we're like, we're full. So, if you're serious about losing weight, you guys, you know, follow those 10. There are at least 90 other tips, so go check those tips out on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. All right, I think that's it for the health news. I think it's time for
Weird News.
All right, what do we got for Weird News, everybody?
Something out of Honolulu. Jennifer Cinco, I'm not going to try to pronounce the last name, September 23rd this year, Honolulu, more than 20 purebred goats, most of them pregnant, were stolen from a Hawaii farm on a full moonlit night with duct tape used to keep the animals from making noise, their owner said. Mm-hmm. Sometime between Thursday night and Friday morning, 23 goats valued for a total of about $10,000 were stolen from one of those words again.
I'm gonna try to see. Oh, where are you? I've got the Kahaku goats. Wait.
Thank you. Yeah, that's it. That's
Kahaku
closer
goats.
And I would have got a 250-acre farm on Oahu's north shore, said owner Keel Ponton.
Mm-hmm.
Two bucks were left behind with ropes around their neck and duct tape over their mouth. He said Monday. I know. Doesn't that like suck? To go out and see that? Oh, my God. It was devastating to us, said Ponton. 23, who has been a goat farmer with several friends for about a year. We're going to find that. 21 of the goats were pregnant, and 10 of them were days away from giving birth. If you think about it, they're taking nannies with babies in them and throwing them over a 6-foot tall fence, he said. Just thinking of pregnant goats going over a fence like that is just sickening to us. Ponton suspects that thieves watching the farm got to know their routine, then waited for the light of the full moon to haul that many animals out. They had to have help, he said. This was a production. They came in on a full moon. 6 of the goats were pets, bottle-fed from birth. One of them is named Kiwi and was about to give birth. She grew up in our arms, following us around the farm, feeding her. Ponton said that was the most important one to us. She was like our family. Ponton contacted the police and is offering a reward amount that he doesn't want to discuss. The case has been classified as a second-degree theft, and police are following up on leads, said the Honolulu Police Department spokeswoman Michelle Yu. I just want my animals back, he said. We love farming. We love ranching. This is our passion. Ever since KHON-TV first reported the theft, Ponton said he's been hearing about goats being sold cheaply for about $20 to $100 each.
Oh, man.
Getting at is he is selling these goats, and he thinks they're his, which more than likely they possibly are.
Right. But my gosh, to 23 goats stolen from a ranch on Oahu's North Shore. I mean, having to go in with trucks, putting duct tape on the goats. I mean, give me a break. This actually makes me angry because, you know, I mean, to raise goats, to raise any type of livestock, that's not an easy job. And, you know, these, you know, goats can be expensive. They provide great milk for cheese and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. I'm sending a shout out to my brothers and sisters in Oahu. If you hear out there, you guys, if you hear anything about someone selling a goat, call the police over there. If you're in Honolulu, call the police because you know what? I want to find these thieves. Freaking coward thieves. You know?
Right.
Stealing,
you know,
stealing something.
Unless it's from
it makes
an actual farm.
What's that?
Unless it's from an actual farm that's selling the goats.
Yeah,
now,
yeah. Unless
now,
it's,
you know,
yeah.
You can't discount that maybe it was another farmer that sold them.
Yeah, you never know. But, you know, I'm thinking that if at least Mr. Ponton can get, like, some leads or something like that. I mean, come on. You know, even if you are a farm person, and I'm going to call out any farmer out there, if you're a farmer and you stole his goats, come on. You know what I mean? Grow some balls and raise your own. That's all I gotta say.
And once again, listeners, she said that very eloquently. Grow up.
I did, right? Yeah, grow some cojones and raise your own goats. You know, Mr. Ponton did. So, you know, if you're going to be stealing goats just for your own personal gain, get a life. You know, and I'm going to call out any farmer that did steal his goats. But I don't know. Something tells me that, I don't know. Something tells me it's probably just someone that maybe isn't quite a farmer or something. I don't know. Maybe it's just someone that wants to sell goats on, you know, Craigslist or something like that.
Point, because if they were a true farmer, they would have known that those goats are pregnant. Knowing the goats are pregnant, they would have waited till the goats gave birth to be able to sell those goats as well.
Exactly. If they were actually thinking ahead and real farmers and stuff, but, you know, I'm sorry, duct tape to keep the goats quiet. It's got to be someone other than a livestock farmer.
Yeah, because nobody would have done that. I mean, you know how many times I wish I was close enough just to do that to you?
Shut up.
And your one student on the line is just going, you know what? If I ever meet this guy, I'll kick him in the teeth.
I was almost going to give you complete silence and play this. Let's see if I can get it to play. Yeah.
Oh, and you were going to give me complete silence. I was just trying to find the downside to that.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, this is what we do, folks.
Now, right. We're going to, real quick, because we are behind schedule right now, because I have now, the thing is, I know you better than any other radio host that does a martial arts show. So usually when we do questions for our guests, I come up with six, you add some, or whatever, usually 6 to 10 questions, that's it. I have 18 for you.
I know, right? I'm like, I don't even know if we can get to all of them, but we'll find out.
I know. Well, I'm waiting for some of your students to call because a lot of them said they would, so they're probably just waiting a little bit.
Okay.
So now I've got two countries, Finland and England, there's only one law in Finland that was weird, I decided to do the next one as well. Well, Finland, taxi drivers must pay royalties if they play music in their cars for paying customers.
What
the hell?
That's a weird royalty law, isn't it? Now,
it
going
is.
On in England, and where does that go? Do they actually pay to a music
Who do
company?
They pay? Yeah. Who right. do they pay, and how do they keep track of the music that they play?
Right.
So, weird. Okay.
Now, England, with the exception of carrots, most goods may not be sold on Sunday.
Oh.
London.
Wow.
Hackney carriages, they're taxi cabs basically, must carry a bale of hay and a sack of oats. Of course, for the horses.
Yeah.
It is illegal to be drunk on licensed premises. In a pub or bar. Where else are you going to be drunk?
What? But it's okay to be drunk out in the street. Is that where this is going?
That's probably because they're drunk and in public. So it's not okay either.
Oh, man.
It is illegal for two adult men. Oh, this is disgusting. It is illegal for two adult men. And right when I said that, you knew where this was going. Okay, take three. It is illegal for two adult men to have sex in the same house as a third person. Wow.
I had to think about that. Oh, so if two guys were doing the dirty inside someone else's house and that someone else is in the house.
No, I'm reading it as a threesome.
Well, I'm looking, let me look at it again. Because I looked at it and I took it as that you can't do the diddly in the same house as another person who owns it or something. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, It is illegal to leave baggage unattended. You know, when you go to the airport out here, they always ask you the same thing. They've got this list of questions. About, did you ever leave your baggage unattended? Did you pack your bag personally? You know, all that. So it's illegal to actually leave your bag unattended. Picking up an abandoned bag, get this, picking up an abandoned bag is an act of terrorism.
Oh, okay. So that's why it makes sense that both of those are illegal. So it makes sense that both of those laws are illegal. Okay.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It is illegal for a lady to eat chocolates on a public conveyance.
That's crazy.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Any boy under the age of 10 may not see a naked mannequin. Come on, they're not atomically correct.
They're not anatomically correct, and
that's the word.
Atomically, well, yeah, I guess too. But
yeah, that
they're not
too.
They're not anatomically correct, and how are you going to know when you walk into a department store that you're not going to see, you know, a naked mannequin? I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Bobby, we can't go into Macy's because there's a naked mannequin over by the perfume store, so we can't go over there. And you don't know that.
That's
crazy.
Right.
That's nuts.
Now,
that's
I don't know where they got this one from. A bed may not be hung out of a window. Wow.
So much for moving out of your sixth floor apartment. Okay.
Exactly. Especially if you've got this real narrow staircase, how else are you going to do it?
Exactly, right?
No cows may be driven down the roadway between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. unless there is prior approval from the commissioner of police. That makes sense. They would hold up cars, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Well, not a friend, but somebody I met, Gary Dill, which I took a seminar with about, 25 years ago, posted a picture. This is traffic in some city in Oklahoma. It was horses and cattle being driven down the street, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm going, wow, and I have to deal with L.A. traffic, you poor bastard.
I know, right? Right?
Then, 1313, MPs are not allowed to don armor in Parliament.
Huh.
You got to figure these some of these laws are going to be centuries old.
Right.
Last one. Cool. Any person found breaking a boiled egg at the sharp end will be sentenced to 24 hours in the village stock. How old can that be? They're talking about putting somebody in a stockade.
Well, that sucks.
Right? That hasn't been done for centuries.
Yeah.
The end of my weird laws for Sunday, September 29th, 2013.
Oh, I love the weird news.
Now, I don't think we're going to take a break because we are so far behind schedule. We're going to go right into the interview. This is where I get a prod, poke, harass, give you a ration of crap for the next hour and 15 minutes.
So for any listeners out there, especially my students, okay, I'm going to call my students out on this one. You know, call in, say hi, ask questions, 347-677-0699, because Sifu Bob is going to be asking all sorts of questions about my background, martial arts, that kind of thing. And you know what, students, you know, I hope to answer as many questions as I can, but this is your chance to ask questions about my martial arts background that I never talk about in class. So 347-677-0699, feel free to call in. All right, Sifu Bob's going to take the helm from now on. He's going to be in charge of the switchboard and everything. I'm just going to sit back with my cup of coffee and have some fun. Here we go.
Well, Sifu, as we start every show with a guest, tell us about your background. Tell us something that students may or may not know about yourself, even though over the course of the show we've learned bits and pieces, but never at one time. So why don't you do that for us?
Sure. And that's exactly how many of the students nowadays know my background is bits and pieces. They're more versed on my latest ventures and stuff like that. But let me go ahead and start back in 1970-something. We'll just leave it at that. 1970-something.
Nice.
Now, I was introduced to martial arts when I was about 8, but it was at the Filipino Community Center here in Seattle, and I really wasn't serious about it. I wanted to do martial arts specifically because of the Kung Fu TV series with David Carradine. I guess it didn't help that I didn't give a year that I started because I just dated myself with the Kung Fu TV series. So anyway, I wanted to do that. I wanted to learn Kung Fu. Later on, I got enrolled into Botokukan Karate. And I'm hearing some feedback. Do you, Bob?
No, I think it's just you.
Huh, weird. Okay. But I started in Botokukan Karate, and my mother actually discovered the class, and it was free, actually. My sensei at the time, or actually my only sensei in Botokukan Karate, Sensei Peter Gurney, he had a grant to start this class at Jefferson Community Center, which was only about 2 blocks away from my house. So my mom said, hey, do you guys want to do karate? So my sister and I said, sure, let's do it. So we went over there, and from day one, this particular class really caught my attention. And I was hooked from day one with that class. I don't know what was so different about, you know, the previous martial arts classes that I had tried, but this class really got my attention, and from that day forward, I went to the library and I checked out every book in the local library, checked out every martial arts book in the city libraries, and just read and practiced and studied, and it was great. And so I started in Botokukan, and actually taught Botokukan until about 1991, 1992. After I had gotten my black belt, I got my black belt at 15, at the age of 15, which was at the time the youngest age anyone in the system had gotten their black belt. And so that was kind of cool. And I taught Botokukan until about 1991, 1992, like I said. But during that time, at about 1990, if I remember correctly, I started taking Kajikembo. Now, this is kind of a cool story, but before we do that, I'm going to do something with my mic because I think I'm hearing some feedback. So hold on a sec. Okay, I hope that works a little better. No, I'm still hearing.
I can still blame you for technical difficulties, even though you're not hosting the show.
Yeah, you can, which is weird because, you know, normally you hear this kind of feedback if there is a if there's someone playing the show on their computer and we're picking up their speakers and stuff, or if someone's on the phone and they're using speakerphone, but I don't get it. But anyway, I'll try something different. Hold on, let me try one more thing here. I'm going to mute your mic and bring it back on. Okay. We'll see if
that
works.
How's that?
Are you on speaker?
No.
That's weird. Let me try something else. Oh, well. All right. Well, I'm going to unplug my mic. Hold on. All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's just distracting me, but okay. But anyway, this is kind of a funny story about how I got into Kajikembo. I was reading a black belt magazine. This was like 1989. And I was reading a black belt magazine, and I saw this really cool article about drills that you can do with a partner to train like close range weapons, like your knees and elbows. And the person that was pictured in these drills was Sifu Terry Faircloth. And, you know, I had heard of Kajikembo, you know, being a mixed martial art, quote unquote, and that it had no nonsense self-defense and all that other kind of cool stuff. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't mind learning Kajikembo. I mean, this art sounds like a really, really cool art. I want to get into it. But I didn't know of any places out here in the Seattle area or the Puget Sound area. Well, after I read that article, I'd say maybe it was about a month later, 2 months later or something like that, a new management trainee came to my restaurant. I was a manager at the Shakey's Pizza restaurant, and I had heard that we had a new manager trainee coming in from another pizza place. And I went, oh, okay, cool. And so I was told that I was going to be the one training this person. And I thought, oh, okay, sure, right? So, you know, this woman comes in and she introduces herself and we find out that she does martial arts. And I said, oh, well, what martial art do you do? And she goes, oh, I do something called Kajikembo. And I said, what? Really? Where? Oh, you know, out in Federal Way. And I'm like, well, what's your teacher's name? And she said, Sifu Terry Faircloth. And I said, what? So this is the same guy that I read about and saw in pictures in the Black Belt magazine, right? And I'm like, no way. Introduce me to your Sifu. Right? And I think it was like that weekend. No, that Friday, I think, I came in. She introduced me to Sifu Faircloth, and I studied Kajikembo from that day. And the management trainee that came to Shakey's, we became great training partners, great friends, and she ended up being my business partner when I opened up a commercial school. Grandmaster Cheryl Johnson of Doce Pares Escrima, she was the person that introduced me to Kajikembo. So, you know, I thank her for that, and thank her for being my training partner all those years and kicking me in the butt to not give up and stuff like that. So, yeah, and definitely I thank Sifu Faircloth for teaching us all those years and stuff like that. It's a wonderful art. You know, if there's anyone out there that hasn't checked it out, at least go check it out. If there's a Kajikembo school near you, just go in and introduce yourself, say hi. You know, don't make it about my style is better than your style and stuff like that. You know, Kajikembo is all about the ohana, the family. So go and introduce yourself. Have fun. Kajikembo people are always very welcoming to anybody. So go check them out. So anyway.
Now, Sifu, did you mute your mic to bring it back up?
Not lately. Why?
Okay, well, you are getting an echo. I'm not hearing it, but one of your students contacted me, and she's hearing it.
Oh, okay. Well, how about, oh, geez, I don't know how I'm going to do this. How about I try calling in on the phone?
Okay. Why don't you do that? We'll see if that fixes it.
Okay. I think it might work because I'm actually on the board already, but let me call in and see if that works. What's our number? Because I never call it. 347-677-0699. Let's see here. Dun, 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 dun. Sorry about the echo, folks. I mean, I'm not hearing it, but apparently if the listeners are, then we need to fix it. Let's see here. Okay. And there I am. I'm going to bring up that mic. I'm going to try to figure out how I'm going to do this here without getting an echo. Okay, now here's an echo.
Oh,
okay, how's that? That's not going to work.
Well, it's good for me.
Is it?
But I've never heard you echoing.
Oh, okay. Listeners, get on the chat board and let us know whether or not we're echoing. Please. Anybody? Okay. Well, we're just going to go ahead and
get moving then. Okay, so that was Kajikembo in 1990. And in a way, I'm still using the concepts of Kajikembo, One Hop Can Do, in my classes, but we'll go ahead and get into that later. And then later on, I just continued my studies. I started studying Doce Pares Escrima at around, well, I initially started being introduced to Doce Pares at around 1992 or 93 through seminars at the Sifu Faircloth School. And that was where I met Grandmaster Christopher Petrilli and Grandmaster Kakoi Kenyete of the Doce Pares system. And I fell in love with it. And I chose to get into it and study it because it is kind of funny. The Filipino chick that learned karate that knows nothing about Escrima.
Right.
How funny is that, right?
Even though you had family members that were Escrimadors.
What was that?
Even though you did have family members that were Escrimadors.
Yes, yes. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit later, too. Oh, this is so weird, Bob. I'm hearing my own echo because I'm on the studio board, but going through the phone. This is driving me insane. Let me try something different. Hold on a sec. I got to fix this. I got to fix this echo for both sides, the listeners and me. Otherwise, I'm going to go insane. Okay, let me try this.
Yeah, one of your students comments, switch mics.
All right. How's this?
Let me find out. For me, it's always been good.
Okay, for me, I'm good too. But listeners, let me know if you hear an echo. I think this is probably the best we can do. Okay, so Doce Pares, fell in love with it, fell in love with the science of it, fell in love with the blade, fell in love with the stick, and it was funny, though, because it's kind of like, even though I had never studied Filipino martial arts at all, I found that the flow and the flavor of Escrima, specifically the Largo Mano range, came very naturally to me. I don't know why. And so it's been kind of a long-running joke amongst people that knew me that maybe I was just channeling part of my family that had passed on, right? And in a way, I kind of believe that. In a way that I'm kind of channeling my great-grandfather, I guess, somehow, some way. But after I got into Doce Pares Escrima, I decided to kind of branch out and take other martial arts that I've always wanted to do. I did Aikido for about 2 years under Sensei Bruce Bookman here at a Seattle Aikido school in North Seattle. And through the Aikido school, I met Sensei Patrick Johnson, who became my first Iaido instructor. I studied Muso Shinden. I studied Muso Shinden Iaido, Muso Shinden Ryu Iaido, Japanese swordsmanship, for years. Even after I had to quit Aikido because of my teaching schedule, I kept up with the Iaido. I absolutely love it. It still holds a very beautiful place in my heart, and I still practice to this day. At least once a week, I clear out the family room downstairs, and I put on the hakama and the keiko gi and pick one of my favorite blades, and I practice. It's been fun. And also since then, I took up kudo, which is Japanese archery, and attained a shodan rank in that, went to Japan to take my test and study with the Japanese masters over there. That also holds a special place in my heart. Right now I'm kind of bummed out that I can't practice at the current studio that I have because I don't have the length of space for proper shooting, nor do I have the overhead room, the ceiling height for my 7-foot bow. So I'm finding it hard to practice. But usually when the weather's good, I'll just take my arrows and my target outside and I'll practice there. But even then, I feel kind of weird about it because it's all in the open. And I haven't missed the target yet, but if I do, it's an arrow. So I prefer not to practice outside unless I'm basically right next to my target.
Right, and to find a good weather day in Seattle might be kind of tough.
It is, especially like the last couple of days, and it's going to get worse tonight too. But one of the arts that really, really made another impact in my life, and that's not to say that the other arts did not. Of course, all of the martial arts and all of my teachers have made an incredible, incredible impact on my life. But you know, I do want to do a shout out to Master Yi Zhao Hong and Grandmaster Chen Zhenglei for basically like helping me change my outlook on martial arts on a whole. Now, you know, coming up in the martial arts with the previous arts and studying different arts and getting a feel for different concepts and flavors of and philosophies of martial arts, you would think that I, you know, would have a pretty good understanding of how all the arts blend together. Well, on a technical level, I did. However, you know, Grandmaster Chen Zhenglei and Master Yi Zhao Hong were the people that really made me take a deep look at myself internally through the internal arts of Tai Chi. Now, Master Hong was my Wushu instructor, so I did Wushu for a long time too, and I competed heavily in international and world tournaments in Wushu, and did pretty good. A couple of national championships and one international championship in Tai Chi. But the Tai Chi has really been something that's brought everything together. And the main reason why it brought everything together was because there's a stereotype about Tai Chi. That's kind of like the weird thing about it. Because of a stereotype, it brought all of my other arts together. And that stereotype is that Tai Chi is only for old people. Tai Chi is something that you do when you cannot do anything else. Or Tai Chi is something that you do more as just a stress-relieving hobby, right?
Right.
And it was Master Hong and Master Chen that woke me up to the fact that Tai Chi initially was a martial art. And it showed me that, you know, Tai Chi is a lot harder than it looks, folks. I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, Tai Chi is just moving slow, right? I've had several people, you know, tell me, you know, and teachers in their own right tell me that, oh, you shouldn't do Tai Chi if you're, you know, like a beginner in martial arts because it's too advanced for you, quote unquote. And, you know, and I believed that for years that, you know, you have to be advanced in a martial art already in order to do Tai Chi. But, you know, it took a trip to China to realize that you can start at any time. When I went to China, I saw little kids, 5-year-old kids practicing Tai Chi. And it's part of their life. And I thought, now I know they're not advanced. They're only 5 years old. So what is all this about? You know, it's too esoteric, it's too, you know, it's too advanced for people. No, you can start at any time. Yes, the philosophy can be too esoteric sometimes, but you can start Tai Chi at any time. And that's what changed how I look at martial arts as a whole. And, you know, for the last almost 20 years since I began doing Tai Chi, it's completely changed how I move. Blending all of my other arts together, it's changed how I look at blending our other arts together, changed my outlook on the flavor and the true concept of universal principle, right? It just brought everything together. So, you know, I have to thank them for that, Tai Chi and Wushu. Qigong. I also got into Qigong, and I'm certified in Qigong. What else? What did I miss? I think I'm missing something. did I get everything? That's pretty bad when you can't even remember everything that you've studied. Yeah, I think that's it for my background as far as martial art.
So much, jeez. So much for all your students calling in asking you questions you don't cover in class because you just covered it all. So.
Well, they can still ask. They can still ask if they want. In fact, I invite any of my students to call in. Come on, you guys. 347-677-0699. Don't be shy. We also have a chat board underneath the Blog Talk Radio Show marquee. Just scroll down a little bit from the Blog Talk Radio Show marquee, and you'll find a chat board. It's not the marquee that you find on Facebook, right? So if you're listening from Facebook, you actually have to click the link that's in the post to go to the actual Blog Talk Radio Show marquee. That's where you'll find the chat board. But call in, you guys. Come on now. This is your last chance. All right. Here we go.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Now, in 1991, you decided, I don't know if it was a smart idea or not so smart idea, but in 1991, you decided to open up your own commercial school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, doing it at 25, that's a young age. But you've mm-hmm. been teaching for years. What made you take the leap into opening a commercial school?
Wow. Well, let me back up to when I was 15 and got my black belt. When I got my black belt, the first thing that came to mind as I put that belt around my waist that very day was, one day I want my own school. And that was a big dream of mine. One day I want my own dojo. And, you know, not long after I started teaching beginner classes at my own dojo, I got calls from the surrounding community centers in Seattle and started teaching at two community centers in the Seattle area. And since then, you know, and my other black belt brothers and sisters got their own teaching certification, they also went out into the community centers. So that way, Botokucon was in almost every community center in the Puget Sound area. Every community center you went to, if they had a karate program, it was Botokucon. And it was one of seven people that was teaching at these community centers. And I was in two of them. And I was really satisfied with that. I was satisfied going to community centers and teaching. I had a great student base. I had 30 people at one place and 50 at another. And teaching all the classes on my own, loved it. Did that for years since I was about 16, 17. However, you know, by the time I hit my early 20s, I thought, wow, you know, I really love what I'm doing at the community centers. But there were little things that started to kind of get my goat, so to speak. One of them was that I was at the mercy of the community center. So if there was like a wedding party or something like that that had reserved the room that I normally taught in, I would show up sometimes and then there'd be a big party in there. No one would tell me. And I would have 30 people waiting outside in their karate gis trying to get in, and you can't. And there was no other room to teach in, so I'd have to teach out in the baseball field or out in the parking lot or whatever, right? That didn't go so well when it would rain. So it was, and it's Seattle, right? So that didn't go so well. So, you know, I let it go, but it was still kind of on my, you know, I hate this list, right? It was kind of a pet peeve of mine. Another thing was I had no say as to who joined. So, you know, if somebody with a bad attitude decided to join because they just wanted to learn to kick some ass, I had to take them. Because I was not in charge of who came into the school and who wasn't. And that happened a lot at one community center, because one community center was kind of in the middle of what we would call the hood. And I got some teenagers that would come in and, you know, just talk smack and challenge me and challenge the other students. And I'd have to, like, set them straight, literally, call them out. And I just didn't want to do that. You know, so I asked the powers that be, I'm like, you know, can I vet who comes in? They're like, sorry, it's a community center. And I'm like, well, all right. Okay. Well, at around this time, I was like in my early, you know, early 20s. And I was also taking Kajikembo at the same time. So I was teaching in the community centers, working an 8-hour job, and taking Kajikembo. And, you know, my training partner, Grandmaster Cheryl, she said, why don't you just start your own school? Have you ever thought about that? And the premise actually scared the mess out of me. Now, I had had a previous business. I owned a security company for about a year and a half. And I'll just say I had a bit bad experience about it. I was I'm trying to change what I say so that way it doesn't sound too bad. I was betrayed by one of my employees, and it put me in debt, in a lot of debt. So I had to close the business. And the premise of starting another business scared the hell out of me. So I kind of like put it on the back burner, and I kind of went, commercial school, money, and I was still in debt when the idea was suggested to me. So, you know, that kind of adds to the fear, right?
Right.
So, you know, here I am, $10,000, $12,000 in debt. It was more like $12,000 in debt in the hole. You know, using credit cards to live, basically, and someone says, start a business. In my head, I'm saying,
you're going, what have you been smoking?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, on top of that, I had a really good job. I was, was management of security at a large company, you know, making a lot of money, great benefits and stuff like that. And the thought of quitting that job and having no insurance, you know, no benefits, no nothing, scared me as well. And my Sifu, Sifu Terry Faircloth, he suggested the same thing. He said, you know, why don't you start your own studio? And I told him, you know what, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of scared. And he looked at me and he said, you can do anything you set your mind to. You know, I'm behind you. You know, we're all behind you. You know, if you want it, go get it. Grab the bull by the horns, pretty much, is what he said. And I said, okay, you know, now that I know I've got all these people behind me, right? You know, because, you know, all my life I'd been the type of person that would be like, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. That was my management style. That was, you know, that kind of thing. And
That and the fact, Sifu, you're just a control freak.
Actually, no, but I can go a little deeper because, you know, I'll be honest. My personality type is not so much about control because I tend to give a lot of that control away. And anyone that knows me really well, you know, like Grandmaster Cheryl, she will agree that I tend to give away my power. And that's something that she'd been working with me on for years and years and years and years. I tend to give away that power and allow other people to have it.
I find out with that. That is why marketing yourself does not come so natural to you.
No, it doesn't, because I hate that in a way. I hate having to market myself because, you know, that's not to say that I'm not confident about myself. By all means, I am. But when it comes to, in a sense, you know, bragging about myself, because in a sense, that's kind of what you have to do if you have to market in a way. Bragging
That's
about
right.
myself is something that I can't do because it either comes out like I'm a stuck-up bitch or that it comes out really weak because I don't like to do it, right? And I don't find a happy medium. But, you know, now that I knew that I had all these people behind me, I decided to do it. I found a space that was only like 1,000 square feet. It was a shack. And when I say it was a shack, it was a shack. It looked like a fishing shack. It was pretty bad.
Nice.
It was like falling around. It was overgrown. The lawn, you know, and basically it was like a little house. It used to be a taekwondo studio years and years and years and years and years and years prior. And it was empty for years. And it was like falling around its ears. The lawn was overgrown. And I knew that I had a lot of work ahead of me. And I thought, oh my God, what did I get myself into? But my students from the community centers, they followed me to this commercial studio. They all got together, and within 1 month, everything was fixed up. It looked like a cute little karate dojo, you know what I mean? complete with a backyard, you know, that we manicured and, you know, made to kind of look like a Japanese garden because there was bamboo growing all around it and stuff. And it was tough at first because, you know, I decided, you know what, I'm not going to quit my job. I'm going to start this studio and I'm going to only do it in the evenings. Because I had to hang on to that job, right? I wanted to make the money and save up so that way, you know, if I ever did have to open a full-time studio, I could. And at that time, Master Cheryl was teaching Tejikembo during the day and I was teaching Botokakan at night. And one day there just came this point where we went, let's just open commercially, but let's open just teaching one Hopkendo. Now, that scared me even worse because I almost thought that I was turning my back on an art that gave me like 22 years of foundation, right?
Right.
But, you know, I talked to the master of Botokakan at the time, which is now the grandmaster, Soke Robert Hill, who was a guest on our show. And I said, well, okay, this is what I want to do. I'm not turning my back on you guys. I just want to try this because I've done this for like 22 years. I've taught for 20 years. And basically, you know, he gave me the okay, gave me the blessing and just said, okay, you know, just make sure you give credit where credit is due. You know, do your thing. And that was when I took the plunge and quit my corporate job. And went full time. And, you know, as any martial arts teacher will tell you that has a full time dojo, it's not easy. It's not like, it's not that, you know, oh, I have the money, you know, to pay rent on a school. I have the money to fix it up. Now I have a school. It's much, much more than that. A lot of sleepless nights that me and Master Cheryl had, many sleepless nights, lots of planning. Of curriculums, throwing out bad ideas, bringing in good ideas, marketing, you know, how to market, which was tough because, like I said, I can't market worth a damn, especially when talking about myself. But luckily, you know, Master Cheryl was a genius when it came to marketing. On top of that, you know, we had my Sifu, who was also a genius at marketing also. So we had this great, you know, support system that helped us through it. And within that first year of opening full-time commercially, we had almost 100 students, actually within 6 months. And, you know, after that, we figured, okay, you know, now here comes the hard part. If we can last 7 years, we'll be okay. And we're still around, so... Yay.
Well, now, moving on, you know, because we still have a lot of stuff to go over.
I know, right? And it is only like 45 minutes. I know, but you know what, folks? You know what, listeners? You know, we have up to another half an hour after we go off the air. So just before we go off the air, if Bob still wants to answer questions or ask questions or whatever, I'll go ahead and answer them. And y'all can actually listen to the fully archived show after we're done. But you got that, students, if you're listening and you want to ask questions, call in now. We've only got 40 minutes. All right, let's go.
That's right. Okay, so you've studied a lot of different arts and had a lot of different arts in the family. You know, you've studied the Kokutan, Wang Hao Kundo, Tejikembo from different teachers and so forth. What is it that makes up the actual core curriculum in your school? And do you keep them separate? Do you blend them or mix them, whatever term you want to use? So tell me about
that. Okay. The curriculum as far as belt requirements, so to speak, is based on the Tejikembo curriculum that I grew up with. So the monkey forms, the concentration forms, you know, all that. So in order to get your rank, you know, you learn those forms. That's your base, okay? Same with the self-defense concepts, you know, that's your base. Everyone learns the same self-defense concepts that were passed down to me by Sifu Faircloth. However, those concepts are supplemented by the principles of Tai Chi and even Iaido, Kyudo, Wushu, Northern and Southern styles of Wushu, and even the bullwhip. Okay, well, I guess we'll get to that later. But, you know, if there's anything that I want my students to know, it's principle. The only thing that differs between arts is, number one, the focal point of each art. Like, what does it focus on? You know, like Taekwondo focuses on kicking, and, you know, boxing focuses on punching, you know, that kind of thing. So that's one thing that differs between art to art. And two, the innate flavor that art is known for. Those are the only things that are different. But the principles remain the same. So, you know, if when I introduce these other flavors, so to speak, of these other arts, I always make it a point to say, now here's the principle behind this Kyudo draw or whatever, expansion. Well, that's the same principle in Tai Chi, which is the same principle that you want if you want maximum effect in a strike. You have to have this sense of expansion when you hit, not just like move your fist to a target, but you have to have the sense of whole body expansion. And what I want the students to learn is to how to tie that all together, so that way they have a comprehensive outlook on martial arts instead of just being stuck in one frame of mind. And that's where I think a lot of people get into the mindset of my art is better than your art, blah, 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 because they're only stuck in one mindset. But, you know, if they get like a comprehensive look at the world of martial arts, I'm hoping that they understand martial arts for what it is. Yes, it's a fighting art. Yes, you study it to learn how to fight. But yes, there is a philosophical side to it that does apply to even the fighting side. But unfortunately, too many people separate the two. They separate the internal aspect from the external aspect, and they think it has to be one or the other. It has to be about hit, hit, fight, fight. If you get into martial arts, you have to fight, you know. So, I mean, let's look at MMA. A lot of people go, if you want real fighting, go to MMA. Well, all martial arts are MMA if you really look at it. You know, if you really take a really good deep look at it. Because, you know, even Taekwondo people, you know, yeah, they kick, but why? To close the gap. That doesn't mean that they don't know how to punch. It doesn't mean that they don't know how to grapple. They do. They know how to do all that, and they teach it. But a lot of people just see the kicking and they go, oh, it's just a kicking art, right? So that's kind of what my curriculum is based on, is it's the Kajikembo belt requirements, but with my experience and Master Cheryl's experience explaining everything, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Now, you during the week, you teach a lot of private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, now don't take this, of course, the wrong way, listeners, but you also teach non-conventional private as through a virtual presence using Skype. Tell me how that works.
Oh, you know, I love it. Yay for technology. The way I've been doing Skype lessons is that, you know, all I ask is that students have a Skype account. And I do have private lesson packages as far as fees that we choose. And by availability, we just set up a time every week, a day and a time every week to meet on Skype. And we hold video lessons. But rather than just, you know, getting online and watching a video and learning from it, it's live. I get to watch you in real time, and I get to correct you in real time, as well as show you the correct ways to do stuff. And you can actually interact and ask questions, and we talk about it during the lesson. And, you know, just within the last, you know, 2 months, you know, that I've actually been doing the Skype lessons, it's been, you know, one of the greatest tools that I've used. It's allowing me to expand. And I hope to talk about that a little bit later, expanding, you know, my teaching and stuff like that and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, it's great. And I can't say enough good things about Skype and any other type of live video feed. So for any of my students out there that moved out of state, if you want to continue, hook up with me. You know where to find me.
What weapons do you teach in class?
In class, I teach broadsword, Chinese broadsword, Chinese straight sword, and also the double variations of those weapons, so double broadsword, double straight sword. We teach, of course, stick fighting, knife fighting through Doce Pares and the curriculum that was passed down to us by Grandmaster Christopher Petrilli. I also teach the very basic rudimental skills of Japanese swordsmanship. I am not certified to teach a particular style of Iaido, so I refuse to teach Iaido to anyone that begs and pleads, because I'm not certified and I prefer not to break that rule. But the rudimentary principles, yes, I will teach. I teach staff, spear, flexible weapons such as the chain whip and the rope dart and the bull whip. What other weapons? We teach also tabaktayok, that most people know as nunchaku, balisong, stick and dagger, sword and dagger. I'm missing something. Did I say bull whip? Yeah, bull whip. Projectile weapons such as a blowgun, slingshot, archery. I think that's it. Basically, name a Chinese weapon, I can teach it. Japanese weapon, I can teach it. Tonfa, sai. Yeah.
And
I'm not
even
saying
if
that
you
to brag.
Don't know
I'm
it, you can still teach. You can still teach it, because whoever you're teaching it to won't know the difference.
Well, yeah, well, that's true. But if I don't know a weapon, I will be honest and say, you know, I don't know it. You know,
and to all the students out there that study with Sifu, she just said she, no matter how much you beg and plead, she won't teach it. She does like people that beg and plead. So go ahead, beg her for it. You won't get it. And she won't teach it, but you can go ahead and beg for it just because she likes it, appease her every now and then. Now, you did mention bullwhip, which I really appreciate, because that gives me a segue into my next question. One, why the bullwhip? I know you teach as part of a group that you call the Seattle Snapdragons. Does the whip fit into your regular curriculum, or do you always teach it separately? I know you teach it every third Sunday. That's why we have the Sunday brunch show, even though today you had to switch to the tournaments and seminars and whatever else you are doing in the Seattle area. Now I know you're getting busier, but tell me about it. Tell me about the bullwhip.
Well, the bullwhip was something that I always thought was really cool ever since I was a kid. You know, I watched the Zorro movies and thought, oh, wow, that's a bullwhip. That's kind of cool. There was something about the elegance of it. I never really saw the bullwhip as a punishment tool. You know, yeah, you see that in the movies and stuff like that, but I saw it as more of an elegant type of an apparatus since I was a kid. Well, I took a seminar in like 1997 in Baltimore, Maryland on Shaolin bullwhip. It was just a 2-hour seminar. It was one seminar. And when I learned to make that whip crack the first time, how do I explain it? It was empowering, you know, for lack of a better term. And I'll have to ask my whip students that, you know. I mean, when you make a whip crack cleanly and you do it on your own, it is a sense of empowerment in a way. Not like I have power over something, but, you know, it gives you the sense that you're holding something that has so much potential. Right. You can gently, you know, in this case, you can gently guide livestock by sound. You can control the sound, you know, which is why, you know, some whips are called signal whips. Depending on how you use the whip, you can signal like sled dogs. You can give commands with sled dogs just using a whip. It's great, you know, but you've got this like apparatus that has so much potential. You can do art with it. You can, couple it with another whip and do pretty much like drum beat music with it. You can twirl them. You can make shapes with them. You can crack them in different patterns and stuff. You've got like all these types of possibilities. But that's how I felt when I got that first crack. I felt empowered. And I thought, wow, you know, what an art form, right? So I bought a cheapo touristy whip when I got back home, started practicing with it, so that way I could crack that whip cleanly each time. Now, however, when I got introduced to shell and bullwhip, it only had two cracks that was in the form that I learned. It was just the sidearm crack and the overhead crack. And I knew there was more. There had to be more. So I just started playing around with angles, using Eskrima and the Filipino martial arts as my guide. So I've got like a, I've got Filipino martial arts to really thank for allowing me to think outside the box with the bullwhip, to follow the angles of Eskrima and even the footwork, and even the techniques such as loptic, wittic, redondo, and stuff like that, on how to utilize the whip. But my practice kind of went by the wayside for a few years because of my teaching schedule and life in general. I went to a Renaissance fair and saw a bunch of bullwhips for sale. And it, like, brought back the interest. And I said, oh, gosh, okay. So I bought a bullwhip at the Renaissance Fair and started cracking it again. But this time I figured, you know what, I'm going to get serious. So, you know, when I wasn't having class, I would lock the doors and I would practice, hours and hours at a time. It became an obsession. Started buying whips out the yahoo. Started, you know, researching whips. What makes a good whip? What makes a crappy whip? Started making friends with whip makers and whip artists such as Robert Dante, Adam Winrich, you know, making friends and stuff like that, and just kind of sharing together via video, via Facebook and stuff like that. And that added on to my training. And it's just been an obsession ever since. It's been an obsession for, you know, going on, you know, 10 years and, well, 10, 12 years or something like that. But just within the last few years, I've gotten really serious about it. It's still a big obsession. And now I'm teaching it. And my friend Lynn Yancha and I, we co-founded the Seattle Snapdragons group. And we meet every third Sunday at the Seattle School of Acrobatics and New Circus Arts. And I teach how to crack the whip. I teach targeting, whip cracking tricks, but also martial art applications with the whip. And it's pretty fun. And as far as keeping it separate, right now the classes of bullwhip and are separate from my regular curriculum at my studio. However, I do use the concept of how a whip works when it comes to teaching certain types of strikes or even kicks. So, you know, it does find its way into my core curriculum at the studio, but the actual use of the apparatus is completely separate.
So. Oh, very cool. Well, now, your student, Annette, writes, yes, first crack was empowering, and it is beautiful. And then she says, and you can use it as other weapons. Now, you said something very interesting to me, and sometimes this is hard for a student to grasp, is the fact you're using the let's say, the asterisk or the collie angles, the scream angle, as practicing with the bullwhip, whether you're using the actual 12 count from Dose Paris, you were, I'm sure, triangulation footwork. And I want to point out that a weapon is a weapon and uses the one weapon can transfer to the use of another weapon. Did that make sense? It's just the extension of your hand, whether it's a stick, bullwhip, tanfa, comma, whatever it is, you can use it the same way.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and that's the point that I try to make when I do use the concept within my kung fu classes and also in the bullwhip. However, I do have to put in a disclaimer, though, in that, you know, the bullwhip, because it's entirely flexible, it's like the rope dart and the chain whip in the sense that since it's not solid, you have to be able to monitor the end of your weapon at all times because, you know, like you can't really do a wittick like you would with a stick with a bullwhip or a rope dart because you'll hit yourself in the head. So you have to be able to time that WITIC or to time your follow through, I guess, with a WITIC. If there's a, which is weird because it's like it's a retracting strike. How do you follow through with it? But with the whip, there is a follow through that you have to do, because I've had too many people hit themselves in the eye because they would try to WITIC like they would, or abanico like they would with a stick or with a rope dart. Definitely with a rope dart. If you, you know, if you do a WITIC or an abanico type of a thing with a rope dart, you'll catch yourself in the teeth. And I don't know what it is about the rope dart, but it always catches you in the teeth. I've had students chip their teeth because they know that the principles of other arts are applicable, but you have to know and feel each of those flexible weapons, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, it is a weapon in your hand.
Right. You can use them in other arts, but, of course, the flexible weapons are going to be an adaptable weapon. You have to adapt it. You have to monitor. You have to wear your goggles, your safety protection. Guys,
exactly.
I'm sure at the beginning, I'd recommend them wearing cuffs, especially when they're doing like a nunchaku. I mean, how many times I've hit myself really close? I've never hit myself in the groin, but I've come really close, and I thought maybe I should be wearing a cuff. But always safety first, goggles, whatever you want to wear, but as long as you stay safe, keep the eyes. Hitting yourself in teeth, I just find that funny. I'm sorry.
I chipped a tooth with a sharp rope dart, and I was just like, God, really? But yeah, definitely I want to put that disclaimer out there for all of my students, because, you know, a lot of people will hurt themselves either A, because they're overconfident with, you know, by saying, oh, I know a scream, I can do this easy, and then they hit themselves, or they lash themselves, which is really painful, or they lash their ear with the tip of the whip or something, or, and this is where the other types of injuries come, is they're using a flexible weapon, but they're afraid of hitting themselves, and they're doing things to not hit themselves. That's what's going to get you injured. Because, yeah, because my whole take on it is, if you're afraid of the weapon, it will seek to bite you. So just be careful out there, you guys. All right.
Very cool. Well, now I'm going to move on to some stuff. See, I was on the other radio show, Modern Combat Masters, with you a year ago in 2013, before we started this show.
Mm-hmm.
We'd only, at that point, we'd only known each other a year. Now we've known each other 2 years. We've done, you said it at one time, at that point, a year later, after we met, we've done 5 years worth of stuff. And now it's growing into like 10. We're like an old married couple. We're growing old together here. Now, in 2011, you were nominated and inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame.
By you,
tell
as a matter of fact.
Tell us about the Masters and your involvement up to date.
Oh, sure. Yeah. In fact, it was you, Brother Bob, that inducted me into the Masters Hall of Fame. This is kind of a funny story. Had never met Sifu Bob at all before. I didn't even know you were a friend on Facebook. I didn't know. I had no idea. I don't know how we ended up as friends on Facebook, but he found my email address through Facebook. I get this email one day that introduced himself. He introduced himself, and he said he read my bio and did some research on me and wanted to nominate me for the Masters Hall of Fame for the Lifetime Achievement Award. And I emailed you back and said, wow, thanks. Is this a joke?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, because I thought it was. Because, you know, I had heard about the Masters Hall of Fame. You know, it was a big organization when I had heard about it. And, and I'm thinking, really? Really? You're with the Masters Hall of Fame? Really? You know, I was kind of skeptical. And I had to ask, is this a joke? And he said, no, I'm an ambassador. And I went to the website, and I'm like, sure enough, he's an ambassador. Wow. Okay. He's on the, you know, Council of Masters and stuff like that, you know, and I thought, whoa, you know, and I figured, wow. Okay. And, you know, I'm the type of person that, you know, would say, nah, you know, I don't deserve to be in the Masters Hall of Fame. There's so many other people that deserve to be in the Masters Hall of Fame. But there was something about Sifu Bob that was really sincere you know, and something about the Masters Hall of Fame itself as an organization that was really sincere. It, you know, it wasn't about the money. It wasn't about let's get all these members so that way we were the top dog of Halls of Fame. It was never like that, and it isn't like that. And so I said, okay, I want to be a part of this organization. So I was inducted by Sifu Bob into the Masters Hall of Fame in 2011. And since then, I had been asked by the CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame, Hanshi Dan Heck, to be an ambassador to the Masters Hall of Fame. So the same job that Sifu Bob had when he nominated me. And I said, yes, I'd love to give back. I'd like to help recognize people all over the world for their contributions to the martial arts as a whole. This year was my first year as a full-fledged ambassador. I had inducted several people into the Masters Hall of Fame. I inducted Sifu Charles Shepard, Sifu Daisy LaPointe, Sensei Tyrone Asfi, and Soke Robert Hill into the Masters Hall of Fame. And I've got a whole big old list of people that I want to hopefully bring into the Hall of Fame just as recognition for their contributions to the martial arts next year. And it's been a fun experience being able to be a part of the organization and helping the organization give back because, you know, I kind of want to do a plug for the Masters Hall of Fame, if I may.
Go ahead.
The Masters Hall of Fame, you know, there's like tons of halls of fame out there, you guys. You know, get on the internet and type in Martial Arts Hall of Fame. Lots of them are going to pop up. And, you know, all of them are great. I'm not saying that any are bad or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes you'll find that some halls of fame are directed only toward one art. You know, you might find that, you know, some Martial Arts Hall of Fame will focus more on, you know, having the celebrities in there. And that's fine. You know, every Hall of Fame can do whatever they want. But the whole premise, or I guess the whole dream that Hanshi Dan Heck has about the Martial Arts Hall of Fame is that recognizing excellence in martial arts, he hopes that this continues when he's gone. And that all of us as current ambassadors are gone. He hopes that people step up and keep this dream alive and recognize people throughout the generations for their contributions, no matter how small people might think contributions are. Because a lot of people think, oh, you have to be a celebrity to contribute to the world of martial arts. You have to have a 3,000-foot school, you know, to contribute to the martial arts. And, you know, we here as the ambassadors are here to say, no, that's not only how it works. You can be teaching out of your garage and touch the lives of only, you know, 20 people. And you've made a difference because they're going to step out and make a difference, you know, under your name as well. So, you know, it's all about recognizing the martial arts. I mean, you know, the thing is like, you know, we've had a couple people go, yeah, I got to pay for my own dinner. But that's just for dinner. We provide everything else. We provide, you know, seminars and, you know, networking and just all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a great organization. And I think that, you know, if you're not a part of the Masters Hall of Fame, you know, at least follow it. You know, you don't necessarily have to join, but, you know, at least follow it because, you know, we're out there to just, you know, spread the love pretty much. So there's my plug
right.
for the Masters.
I saw more of your students come down one of these days. Maybe you'll bring a concession down with you. Because like last year, you and I taught seminars. I was in charge of putting it together. We had a table outside for a radio show. You were giving interviews. I was getting interviews. We did interviews that night. It was a great time. We had a blast. Now.
Yeah, it was great.
And where was it in 2012? You were invited to teach in 29 Palm, California for the United States Council of Martial Arts Standards, the USCMAS. That was a pretty good weekend. Tell us about your experience.
Oh, my goodness. That was a great weekend. And, you know, it was really, I was really honored to be a part of the USCMAS, the United States Council of Martial Arts Standards, which is another wonderful, wonderful organization founded by Master Craig Carter. Wonderful organization. The whole idea behind the organization is to, you know, when we say Council of Martial Arts Standards, you know, we don't want to make it sound like we're like the moral police or anything like that. Right. What it is it's a organization that acts as kind of like a recognition body. Help me out here, Bob, because you're in it too. That helps recognize your school. Recognizes you as a martial arts instructor, recognizes the rank that you hold, and stands behind you in your quest for sharing your martial arts knowledge. Now, of course, there are other perks to being in the USCMAS. You know, you can get consulting on how to use software to manage your school and all this other nice stuff to help network your school and stuff like that. But the main part is we make sure that the people that are part of the USCMAS are of the highest standards. You know, there are no schools and affiliate schools and instructors in the USCMAS that have questionable morals, so to speak, you know. And that's just, you know, I guess that's just kind of the idea behind the organization. Am I getting this right, Bob? Help me out.
Pretty much, absolutely. And it's not, we don't accept the word of an applicant. We actually research them. We will call their instructors, make sure everything they're telling us is up to date. It is directed by, like you said, Matt, Craig Carter, the membership director, as I believe, because I know he does the research and fills the applicant, is I forget what rank he is in the Marine Corps, but it's held by Sam Albright, and he handles the membership. Really good organization. We had a great weekend that weekend. Oh my God, it was
so good.
It was
incredible.
That personal tour we got of the Marine base was amazing.
It was. We got a incredible tour of the Marine base at 29 Palms. And, you know, for our listeners out there, you know, if you're not familiar with the base at 29 Palms, it's its own city. It's got its own community centers and restaurants and bowling alleys. And, you know, it's its own city, basically. And sometimes you forget that you're on a Marine Corps base. Well, with the exception that, you know, you see tanks in the street and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
But I was like, oh, my God, that's a tank driving across the train tracks. What's going on? But it was wonderful to get a tour of that. And what better place to have a warrior arts convention than the capital of the United States that trains warriors? You know what I mean? The Marine Corps capital of the world, pretty much, I think. I think it's the largest Marine Corps base in the world.
That's right.
And it is incredible. I loved that. But you know what I loved more was the camaraderie that I felt being my first time at USCMAS. And on top of that, not only my first time, but my first time being asked to be a seminar instructor. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do, right? When I found out what masters were going to be at this seminar, I kind of freaked a little bit, just a little bit. Because, you know, I'm really confident when I have to teach, but I'm thinking to myself, not so much that I was scared to teach, but more like, what am I going to teach these people? What am I going to teach that they don't already know? Because these are masters. I mean, we had Soke Greg Woldridge there. We had... You know, Graciela Casillas there, Jacob Bressler there. We had like a bunch of, you know, well-known martial arts masters. And I'm thinking, I'm teaching Tai Chi. What the hell am I going to teach? But
your seminar was the busiest. You had more students than anybody else. Because it was being Tai Chi, you had the people there that just came to watch, the wives or husbands of the instructors that were there or their spouses were involved, they were getting up for you. They weren't getting up for anybody else.
Well, I didn't notice that because I was in my little teaching universe, because, you know, when I'm teaching seminars, I'm in my zone, and when I'm teaching, I'm always in a zone. And I noticed that there were a lot of people, and everywhere that I walked, I would sector out the crowd, so that way it was just a little crowd here, a little crowd there, instead of huge crowd, that kind of thing.
Right.
Because then, you know, then I'll get like all ADHD, and then, you know, we don't want that.
Well, I've seen that part of you too.
yeah, that's just part of my personality. I can get a little overwhelmed if there's like huge crowds. So, you know, I've learned all through my life to just sector everything out, and everything's fine. But then it was you that told me that you know, the audience got up for my seminar, which explains it. But, you know, what was weird was correcting the masters that were in the class. We were doing push hands.
Yeah, how do you correct Gracie L. Cecilia?
Yeah, right? It was so weird. It was an honor, actually, that Graciela raised her hand and said, "Sifu, we're kind of having trouble here. Can you help me out?" And I thought, What? What did she just say? You know, here's this lady that I've admired since I was like 8 years old, you know what I mean? Asking me for help. I thought it was kind of weird. But it was just so weird. It was an incredible experience to meet all of these masters and, you know, to be able to break bread with these masters and just, you know, shoot the breeze with down-to-earth, wonderful people that have come together all for the same purpose, and that's just to share martial arts. And it was a wonderful experience. Another organization that I highly recommend to all of my martial arts people out there. And if you have any questions on how to join, just get on Facebook and type USCMAS, United States Council of Martial Arts Standards. You'll find their Facebook page there. And contact Master Craig Carter on how to join. Great organization.
Very cool. Now,
wonderful.
We only have 10 minutes left of the live feed.
Okay.
We're going to go on. We're going to get through as many as we can.
We're
only halfway through the questions.
I know. So all of my students, if you want to call in now. We've only got 10 minutes of live feed left, or 8 minutes of live feed left. We are going to go off the air in 8 minutes of the live feed. So you're going to have to wait until approximately 1:30 to get to listen to the rest of the show. So call in now. Anyway, let's go.
Yes, that's right. Now, you call in now to make sure that the next class that Sifu has with you goes really well.
You know, we were joking about how everybody's next rank depends on them calling in. But
see, and this is where you're too nice. You're like, well, if you have the time, call in. Did you notice my post yesterday? It said, "Sifu students are expected to call, but her friends and family are encouraged to call."
No, but I do understand that it's Sunday. Like, I know a lot of my students, even right now, are in church. But yeah, you know, if you happen to be listening, folks, you know, feel free to call in. We've only got like now 6 minutes, so. Let's go.
Right. So, now, this was an honor, I was probably one of the first ones to find out about this honor. In February of next year, you are going to Orlando. Whether
yes.
you have to hitchhike, fly, drive, whatever, you're going to be there. Tell us, let's see, I forgot what question I'm on. Darn it. There
Number
it
nine.
Is.
Number nine.
The Association of, now, I may screw this name up. The
okay.
Association of Women Martial Arts Instructor. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. You're being inducted into their Hall of Fame. You showed me the letter. You were so proud. I was happy for you and proud of you and the whole bit. Now, tell us a little bit. Now, until you started announcing, we started becoming friends. I didn't know that there were this many organizations that were dedicated to women in the martial arts, which I'm really glad to see.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about
mm-hmm.
that organization. How did you get inducted? You heard about it through the executive director and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm also a member of PAMA, the Pacific Association of Women's Martial Art. Of Women's Martial Artists, And I've been, you know, I've been teaching for the last 3-4 years and a member of PAMA for the last 3 or 4 years. And the United States, and the Association of Women's Martial Arts Instructors is sort of like a, is another organization that is affiliated with PAMA. It's kind of like the umbrella. PAMA kind of like falls under the umbrella of the AME Association, Association of Women's Martial Arts Instructors. And I'd known about the Association of Women's Martial Instructors for a long time, was invited to, you know, place an application to teach for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. However, the way my schedule was working, it just would never work. And, you know, the venues that AME has their annual conventions at are incredible, you know, places in California, Las Vegas, Reno. This year it's going to be in Orlando, Florida, near SeaWorld. I just couldn't afford to go. Well, imagine my surprise when I got an email from the executive of AME, Zosha Gorbaty. I got this email, and it pretty much started out with, "Hey, hi, just wanted to know if you'd be interested in teaching for AME this year. It's going to be in Orlando. And by the way, you have been nominated to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and it would be our honor if you would accept the nomination." And I found out that Zosha and Sifu Kim Ivy, who is another Tai Chi instructor here in Seattle, nominated me. And I was just so surprised, honored that they would think of me, because there are so many other women martial arts instructors out there that need to be in the Hall of Fame. So many more. And I thought, gosh, you know, like I had with, you know, the Masters Hall of Fame, why me? You know, I'm just like this dinky, you know, dinky teacher in Seattle. Why me? And I decided to accept. And I'm going to be heading out to Orlando next year in February and teach some seminars if I get picked, because we still have to go through the application process. So I hope to be able to teach. And it's going to be different because I'll be teaching teachers, not students per se. I'll be teaching experienced teachers. So this is something that is really going to be enjoyable for me. So that way it'll really, you know, allow me to pull out all the stops in how I teach teaching teachers. Because, you know, we all know as martial arts instructors, when you teach students, you still pull out all the stops, but you still have to think in terms of their levels, right? Well, I'm teaching masters, so, you know, if I get a chance and I get picked, I'll be teaching masters in several subjects, and I'm really looking forward to if I get picked, and I hope to God I get picked, I'm really looking forward to really upping the ante and letting out all the stops for those classes. So it's going to be fun, and yeah, I can't wait. It'll be great.
Oh, very cool. Now, I want to say to your students, you know, we've got 5 minutes left.
2 minutes.
Specifically, because I
we
see one on
minutes,
the line.
Folks. We have 2 minutes, folks. And I'm going to interrupt to tell – it might be. We have 2 minutes, and I'm going to interrupt here in about another 2 minutes to tell the listeners that we'll be going off the air, but they can get to the archive. But we have 2 minutes until I say that. So.
That's right. We have 2 minutes. Now, I have been pushing you. I've been – you've got my foot. Clear up your tail. You're flossing with my shoelaces. I need somebody local to be able to do that on my behalf. Then there's a couple of your students, and the only thing is, and I'll tell your students this, if you have to put your foot somewhere because Sifu Bob said so, Sifu Rusty promises at that time in Lenses During Glass, there is going to be no repercussions because she needs a foot planted in her behind to get her to promote herself and to get her out there. So I'm giving you permission. And as long as it's not disrespectfully done, go ahead and do it.
And we only have 1 minute left, listeners. So thanks for listening. If you'd been listening, we've only got 1 minute. And so we're going to go off the air we're going to go off the air really suddenly, but, you know, do download or listen to the archived version sometime after 1:30, because we're going to be done by 1:30. So, okay, 50 seconds and we're off the air. Okay, so.
Okay, now,
so the students know they can kick my butt.
One of your downfalls, besides the fact is you barely meet the height requirement to ride on Space Mountain in Disneyland.
That's a good one. I love it. I love it.
You like that?
I like it.
What? Let's see if I wrote this one right. Let's see. What is it that you would like to be involved with? Is it teaching seminars? Is it instructional DVDs? Is it writing a book? Because I've had my foot in your tail about all of these, and I've tried to promote you myself because, let's face it, you're not going to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird, and we're going off the air in 5, 4, 3, 2. Bye, folks. Okay, what I want to do, and I hope everyone downloads the archive, is, well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, why I don't like to promote myself. That's just who I am. I can promote everybody else until the cows come home. I can promote anybody else till I'm blue in the face. And I'm strong at that. I can promote anybody, you know. But when it comes to talking about myself, it feels awkward. I don't like doing it. And it's just so odd. And, you know, and it explains why, you know, over the last 10 years or so, I've pretty much, you know, kept to my own little corner of the universe and stuff like that. Mainly because I just wanted to do what I do, concentrate on myself. I was going through like a lot of personal problems back in 2006 and stuff like that. And that didn't help. Me, you know, being a little more withdrawn, that kind of thing, right? But, you know, I got over the personal problems and stuff and just decided, okay, this is what I'm going to concentrate on. I'm going to concentrate on bullwhips. I'm going to concentrate on studying what I want to study because, you know, before that I was, you know, just doing stuff for everybody else. I'm going to do me. In a way I kind of got selfish, but for my own good. Because I was not doing anything to benefit me, right? So I needed 10 years to do that. And during that time, you know, promoting myself just wasn't something that was, you know, high on my list. The only promotion I would do would be word of mouth. My students would go around and promote me for me. But it's not like I would go out and go, here, this is what I'm doing, that kind of thing, just because it felt really awkward. But just within this last year, you know, I like woke up one day literally and went, my God, I need to get out there and do something. And I think it was one of our shows that did it. I forgot what show it was, but I remember saying something like, you never know, you could get hit by a bus and your knowledge is gone with you. You know what I mean? And I remember saying that. And I woke up a couple mornings later, literally having my own words ringing in my head. You could get hit by a bus one of these days and your knowledge is gone with you. And I thought, okay, that's it. I need to, you know, get up off my ass and do stuff. So I'm opening myself up now to do seminar circuits. I want to do, you know, even if it's like a comprehensive seminars on different ways to present your classes, to teach different types of skills, you know, outside of the usual kata and sparring or self-defense, you know, practice and stuff like that. If you'd like, you know, different ideas on what you can add to your classes, seminars on teaching kids, you know, how to put together a kid's curriculum, how to take an adult curriculum and apply it to a kid's curriculum and still have it applicable when they get old enough to come into an older teens class or something, right? Without any, you know, skips. So I'm willing to do that kind of like curriculum type of seminars for people. I'm willing to do Tai Chi seminars, how to incorporate Tai Chi in your own school without having to, you know, necessarily commit to learning a whole complete system, Now, that's not to say that it's going to be a watered-down Tai Chi and stuff like that. You know, for example, if I go and introduce Yang-style Tai Chi concepts as a program to, you know, a karate school, the instructor technically cannot say that they're a Yang-style Tai Chi instructor. You know, I do have a program that's called Tai Chi Health Works. It is part of the Safety Healing Arts business that I have on the side. That got actually put on hold during that time that I was not, you know, promoting myself. But I've revived that part of the business, Tai Chi Health Works, and I actually have a curriculum set up for Tai Chi Health Works on how to introduce Tai Chi exercises and concepts into your school. It doesn't matter if it's karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, whatever, and how to apply those concepts in your own art. So I've got that. I've already had the curriculum. Now it's time for me to teach it. I'm also willing to do bullwhip. I'm also willing to help you set up your own bullwhip club, help you set up your own blowgun club under the United States Blowgun Association, set up your own slingshot, you know, club. Teach you how to, you know, make your own blowgun, make your own bullwhip. You know, I'll teach anything that you want within my scope of knowledge. And that's open. I opened it as of, like, this month. Well, formally. I mean, you and I have been thinking about me doing this for the last, like, you know, three, ever since you started shoving that foot up my ass. But but as of September 1st, I'm open for seminars. All you have to do is get a hold of me on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, or, you know, email me, text me, call me, find me on my personal Facebook page. I'm willing to travel anywhere within reason. And I'm pretty reasonable as far as fees are concerned. You know, I'm one of those people that are like, give me a place to stay, you know, three meals, you know, a little bit of money to get back home, and, you know, I'll be good to go. But I do want to especially, you know, share, you know, my knowledge with everybody, especially how to blend, you know, different arts together. You know, that's the premise behind Tai Chi Health Works, was that, number one, to spread the benefits of Tai Chi, but to allow people to realize that you know, it's already in their system. And to just apply the principles of Tai Chi to it as a different way of movement and a different way of looking at their art, or to be able to take, you know, any other art that they might have and blend it and learn to effectively blend it with any other experience that they might have. You know, and we'll also be going over, you know, all the other disclaimers, like, for example, you know, you learned, let's say, for example, Bob, you learned, pick an art. Let's say you learned, Sayok Kali, let's just say. Let's say you took, like, okay, five seminars with Sayok Kali. You're not an instructor, right? But, you know, how to look at Sayok and look at where the main principle is in it and search for that in your own art. And, you know, how to bring in other instructors that are, you know, instructors in Sayok Kali to reinforce those concepts that are already in your art in comparison to another art. You know, and I've already started doing that. You know, I brought in an instructor in Piketty Tirsha Kali, Guru Roberto Pagan, and I brought him in specifically so he could share the principles. And he was all on board. I'm like, this is kind of what I want my students to know. They already have, you know, these particular principles. I understand that they're also very prevalent in Piketty Tirsha. You know, he asked if he could, you know, come and share Piketty Tirsha. And I told him, that would be great. This is, you know, how about can we do it like this? And he's like, perfect, because it is all about principle. And he reinforced everything that I've been teaching so far, but just presented it in a different way, right? And that's kind of what I want to teach, not necessarily to bring in a different art, but to teach other schools how to do that within their art, either using, you know, arts that they have experience in or arts that I have experience in. So I'm willing to do that. I also, so as well as seminars, that's my big focal point right now. I'm willing to travel. I'm looking forward to traveling. But another project that I'm going to be starting here in a bit is writing a book. This book has been in the works since, oh gosh, it's been a long time, since 1990-something. Let's see, 1990-something. And I want to write a book. I'm going to go ahead and say the name of this book because it's gonna force me to write it. It's called Don't Fight the Tao. And it's going to be a collection of short stories of my own experience in martial arts. Not necessarily, you know, what I've done in the martial arts, but little life lessons that I've learned through everyday experiences. And it's going to be written from the first person view. So I'm going to write it as if I'm talking to you, not writing as if people are reading a formal novel, you know. So it's going to be written in a very personable, in a very personal level. And the book will be asking the reader, in a sense, almost forcing the reader to actually think about themselves in each of these particular aspects of life, to really take a look at themselves based on these particular experiences. So, you know, not only am I going to be talking to you through printed page, I am going to hopefully be asking you to grow in your, you know, in your own life through the book. So that's one of the writing projects. I also want to write another book based on my own experience of just my own experience of blending arts. I don't know if I want to write it like an autobiography or more of a third person view looking at myself. You know what I mean? I'm still looking at the unconventional ways I want to present this book because I don't want it to be just a straight up autobiography. I don't want it to be a straight up how to, because, you know, how to's are great, but I want to approach both books in a way that are so different that it allows people to think on their own too, right? I don't want it to be just about me and my blend. You know, if any other martial arts instructor reads the book, I want them to be able to think about their own practice and their own, how should we say, and their own outlook on what they would like to teach their own students. But I'm still trying to figure out a way. I've got like several pieces of paper that have been thrown in the wastebasket about different concepts. Yeah. You know, different concepts have been like round filed because they just didn't seem right. So, you know, I already know how I'm going to write Don't Fight the Tao because it's been like 10 or more years in the making. It's just now I got to sit down and write the thing. I've already got the primary outline started. Now it's just a matter of inserting all of my notes that I've collected for the last 10, 12, 13 years, right?
Right,
getting those together, getting those edited, making sure that it follows the plan that I want it to do. Because Don't Fight the Tao, I'm not going to get too far into it, but let's just say that when I write the stories, they're not going to fit a sequential timeline, but there is a point to where I want it to go by the time we get to the last story. So that's kind of all I'm going to say about it. It's going to, you know, I hope that when it does get into print, that it's going to be, you know, really cool and that it hits the market in a positive way. The blend book, and I really don't know how I want to what to call it yet, because I'm still coming up with concepts. That's definitely going to be a conceptual style of writing that that I want to be completely different from any other martial art, how-to, self-help, motivational book. And that's my goal. I want it to be completely different. I don't want it to be a textbook. I don't want it to be a do what I do. I want to make it completely different. So those are my two projects as far as authorship. Definitely that has been on my bucket list. I've wanted to go and do a seminar circuit definitely want to write a book before I die.
Well, very cool. You said something interesting about, you know, getting teaching a seminar, maybe getting them to apply what you're teaching into their own art. Now, you taught a very good friend of mine, not really taught, he visited you with his daughter. His daughter was going to a concert, Sensei Master Mike Rivera, and he's used to using two sticks in his Lima Lama art, but has never tried the concept of single the stone.
Mm-hmm.
He was so locked in, so you introduced him, wow, I can actually use a single stick in lieu of two.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
so now I'm gonna skip around because we've got another 20 minutes of recorded feed left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the listeners didn't already know, how did we end up doing a show together?
Well, I already was a co-host on Modern Combat Masters with Grandmaster Daryl Sargent. I was pretty much the background gal and, you know, call screener and stuff like that, you know, ask questions, blah, blah, blah. And I was completely content with being the co-host, being the person in the background, because that's what I'm good for. You know, like I said earlier, I'm good at marketing other people and I'm good at being the support staff. You know, that's my biggest skill. I am the support staff. My gears get turning and I plan very well for someone. So like, for example, if you went on a seminar circuit, I'd be able to manage everything about your seminar circuit and I'd have no problem doing it. But when it comes to marketing myself, well, we already discussed that. Right.
Yeah. How that working out?
Well, that's where you come in, right? Because you're my manager in a way, right? So that's good. But anyway, we decided to do this show because I was actually talking to Sifu Bob about the show. I'm like, yeah, it's a great show. You know, I was talking about like some of the problems with the control board that I had. And I was just kind of like, you know, laughing about it and stuff. And I thought, yeah, you know, it's a really cool show. You know, I thought about having my own show, but I don't know. You know, I thought about having my own solo show. And I thought to myself, you know, would it be fun? Wouldn't it be fun if we had our show where we could like banter back and forth like we are now, just making fun of each other and just having fun with the martial arts, bringing in some guests and stuff? Wouldn't that be cool? You know, and it was more of a passing thought. And Sifu Bob goes, well, why not? Why don't we have a show? Why not do it? Let's do it. And I said, well, you're right. There is every possibility of doing it. You know, so not even an hour later, I said, okay, I got to go. So we hung up the phone. An hour later, I forgot if I texted you or called you. I don't remember. But I said, here's our marquee. We're on in 2 weeks. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Right? And, and it's stuff like that, you know, where, you know, I tend to be the type of person that says this would be a great idea because I'm still thinking in terms of other people, right? And when it comes to me, oh, it would be a great idea, but how am I going to do it? Where am I going to find the time? Blah, 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 blah. And it always takes someone else to say, why not? And that's where Sifu Bob came in and said, well, let's just do it. And I went, oh, wait, you're right. It is possible. So here we are. Here we are with the Dynamic Dojo. It's going to be a year here in another month and a half that we've had the show. And
right. Boy,
oh boy, I don't know how we're going to celebrate that day.
You're going to be out of town.
November 11th?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I am. I am out of town. Shoot. I'll figure something out, dude.
Do you know what my wife would do to me if I went out of town for our anniversary?
Well, yeah, you'd be sleeping in the doghouse when you came home.
If I was lucky. So now we'll move on to the next two questions. Actually, one:
okay.
If somebody approached you says, "I want to take martial arts," what would you tell them? Young person, a kid.
A young person. The first question I'd ask them is why. Just why? Because, you know, especially if it's a kid, you know, like, for example, I got into martial arts because I wanted to be like David Carradine, right? And then I found out it was work. But then again, the Kung Fu TV series already made that clear, that it was work and there was going to be struggle. And Kane went through a lot of mental struggle in trying to understand the way things are and stuff like that. So when it became to be work and injuries and broken ankles and fingers and noses and stuff like that, it was no surprise to me. But many kids that have never seen TV series like that or have never been exposed to a real martial arts class, or all they hear about martial arts is through cartoons or TV, you know, a lot of times when they want to get into martial arts, it's because they see it on TV or because they see it on UFC. You know, very rarely have I ever asked a kid, why do you want to do martial arts? Very rarely will they say, I really want to know more about myself. You don't hear that. You don't hear a kid say, yeah, you don't hear a kid say, you know, I really want to learn to be a better person. I want to learn how to give back to my community. You never hear a kid say that. But the kids will have different reasons that will someday hint to that, right? Like I've had kids say, because I've asked every kid that comes through my door, why? Why do you want to learn martial arts? Okay. And of course, you know, you get the usual, I want to get fit, you know, or the parents will say, well, you know, he's been bullied a little bit, I want him to grow his self-confidence. Or, you know, the kid might say, I want to lose a little weight, you know, that kind of thing. So you get the usual stuff, right? And then I dig a little deeper, okay, and I'll say, martial arts is work. And, you know, are you willing to do the work? If they say yes, then I'll ask them, well, why are you willing to do the work? So it's all about the why, you know. Everyone's got an inherent reason why they want to do martial arts. Although with kids, you know, and even with adults, you know, the first thing that might come to mind might be self-defense, fighting. I mean, just literally just learning how to fight, and that's all they want. You know, they just want to be a badass, you know, or to get in shape, and they don't like the gym. Those are like the three main reasons that I get. But then there's also there's always an underlying reason why they want those. Right. So, for example, right, exactly. if somebody says, if an adult says, I want to learn to fight, and that's it, they don't care about the art, they don't care about the philosophy, that kind of has to make me think, what has gone on in this man or woman's life that makes just the fighting part that much more important? Right. No, I'm not going to ask them about it. I say, you know, I don't care what your reason is, unless, of course, you're going to use this skill for illegal purposes. Then I need to know. But I don't care what the reason is. I want you to ask yourself why. And then I'll teach them. And then after they understand that they have to ask themselves why, the next advice I'll give to them is find an art that resonates with you. Find a teacher that resonates with you. Just because UFC, you know, MMA looks really great on TV doesn't mean that the class is going to be for you. So I'll tell the parents as well as the kids, shop around. And, you know, and if there are any parents listening, I'll tell you, the closest martial arts school to you is not going to be the best. So I have to call out the parents for this, and I might get some flack, but I don't care, but because I highly believe in this. If there's a reason why your child wants to learn martial arts, remember what I said earlier, there is an inherent reason why they want to learn. If you want them to learn, that's fine too. We need to know your reasons why you want them to learn martial arts as well. But the most important is the child. And if you are willing to want this for your child, you want to be willing to do whatever it takes to get your child to where they can get it. And that means, if that means driving half an hour, drive a half an hour. I've met too many people that will not join a school because it's not 10 minutes away. You know, like I'll meet other instructors that say, hey, you know, like the other day I told a martial art friend of mine, I said, hey, did that person that I referred to you go to your school? And he said, no. And I said, why not? She said it was too far away. And I'm like, what? 15 minutes is not too far away. Well, they have to go over the bridge. They have to do da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just too far away. So they are going to join, you know, the school near them. Well, I heard through the grapevine that this kid is not liking it at all. It's just not his thing.
Just right, not his, right. You know what my mother always said, Rusty? My mother always said, if you want to do it, you're going to find it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Wow, that's never happened
that
before.
That was a sneeze. Woo.
If you want to do something, you'll find a way. If you don't, you'll find an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly it. And unfortunately, and again, I'm calling the parents out on this. Okay, parents, I understand work schedules. So, you know, if you get home at like 6 o'clock and you know there's no way you can get your child to class on time, I understand that. And that, you know, and I understand that, you know, a nearby school would be your best bet. But make sure that it's a class that your child resonates with. Because unless you're going to take the class with them, it's your kid doing the work, not you. Okay.
That's right. Absolutely.
And, you know, and shop around. If that class is not what you feel is going to be fun, exciting, and useful for your child, and, you know, and better yet, if your kid doesn't quite like it, then find another school near you. Don't be afraid to shop around. Do not go to the first martial arts school that you see. You know, do not sign on that dotted line contract just because they're 10 minutes away. You know what I mean? But that's another thing. I'll tell people to stay away from contracts. But that's just me. That's just me. I'm not going to get into that. And think about your child. You know what I mean? I mean, come on, parents. You know, I've seen people drive, you know, an hour to get their kid to piano lessons, but will not drive 30 minutes to get their kids to a martial arts class. Why? I think it's because how parents tend to think martial arts is, okay? A lot of parents tend to think that martial arts is simply an after-school activity, something to occupy the kid until they get home, so that way the kid doesn't go home to an empty house. They, you know what I mean? It's a hobby. It's like little league. It's like after-school sports. It's like, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas with piano lessons, now that's a skill to have. I'm going to drive you to the best instructor, and that's an hour away. Well, martial arts is a skill to have. It doesn't necessarily have to be only for self-defense, but I tell you what, parents, martial arts will give your kid, you know, a supplement to all the good things that you teach them, right? We will supplement your discipline. We're not gonna instill our own dogma of discipline. We supplement your discipline. We supplement your values. We supplement, you know, your rules, your, you know, what you feel is important. And getting a kid into martial arts class where there's 30 to 50 to 100 other kids that follow the same supplementary path, through that, the kids learn that that's how to become a good citizen. That it's not just, oh, mom's making these rules and I hate this rule, da, 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 da. All these hundreds of kids are learning the same thing, and then they're learning that through that sense of community. So parents, it is important. It's as important as piano lessons. It's as important as violin lessons, flute lessons, or whatever. You know, shop around. Find that class that your kid, you know, wants to take, is passionate about, and if you can do it, find a way. Because if your kid sticks with it, then you get people like Sifu Bob, myself, and many of the other martial arts instructors out there that are doing this, you know, up until now, right? those are the type of people that are going to be in the world. So go for it, parents. So that's pretty much what I'll tell them.
We've got 2 minutes.
Hold on a sec. Let me double check something. No, we've got up until one more hour until airtime's over. So we can't go any more past 2 o'clock. It'll kick me off.
Well, this is our longest show.
I know it is, but let's just get it done.
All right, so let's get it done. So now that I know we have another, because I thought we did, but then you say we've only got another half an hour and we're still on the air. So now you know we've got another half an hour, so I'm not going to get worried about getting kicked off, and I don't know why I just started babbling like a fool. But anyway, I did. My mouth just started moving a mile a minute. You'd think I had a lot of caffeine this morning, and I did. I only had one cup of Starbucks coffee. Oh, I guess I did have a lot of caffeine this morning.
Yeah, you did.
But anyway, so if somebody wants to get a hold of you, now that's not speaking for me because I only want to get a hold of you by your throat. So, but if somebody wants to get a hold of you, oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you, Annette posted something online that says we're as funny as hell, and she really enjoyed listening.
No, apparently I'm a goat bounty hunter.
I saw that one. Yeah, I'm going, yeah, right. And I told her I love to laugh at your expense, which I do. We are socially networked all over the place for this show. We are socially networked on Facebook, LinkedIn, blogger.com, WordPress.com, Google Plus. We're networked. We have our own website. By the way, that is Seika, SEIKA, network.webs.com. That will take you to the show's website. But if they want to get a hold of you to teach a seminar, ask your advice, do Skype private lessons with you, or train directly with you, how would they go about getting a hold of you?
Well, several ways. You can contact me through my studio website, and that's SeattleWushuCenter.org. Seattle Wushu Center, that's Wushu, W-U-S-H-U, SeattleWushuCenter.org. And there's a contact form there that actually goes straight to my studio email, so you don't necessarily have to write down my studio email because you'll be able to just contact me through that. And there's also the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and hit up Dynamic Dojo. There's also my personal Facebook page, but I just found out that I can't add any more people because I hit the 5,000 mark again.
Again, yeah. You hit it, you delete people, you hit it again. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, what happened? So I can't get anybody there. You can also like the Seattle Wushu Center fan page. You can contact me there. Or you can email me at dynamicdojoradiohost@gmail.com. And I'd be very happy to take any information about our classes. You know, even if you're stopping in the Seattle area and you want to learn a little bit about bullwhips, blowguns, slingshots, you know, shoot some arrows, train with us or whatever, just get a hold of me and you are more than welcome to join us. Our doors are always open. If you're interested in teaching a seminar, you know, yeah, email me. You can find me several places. I'm not all that hard to contact.
No, you're actually very easy to contact. I got a hold of you a little over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So with that said, thank you for being on our show. It wasn't that you were sitting here talking to yourself for, oh, my God, 2.5 hours now.
I know, right?
I thought it was a fun show. Time went by very quickly.
Yes, it did.
Remember when you're giving them push-ups this week for not calling in and not listening, tell them this is from Bob.
No, I'm pretty sure that we're going to get that they'll listen, you know, on archives after they get out of their own busy days and stuff like that. But this was fun. This is the first time ever that I've been interviewed on my own show. Kind of weird. But
that's right. And for a change, though, it wasn't because we couldn't get a hold of a guest. or the guest canceled or whatever, we actually had this plan for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, it was just something fun, and we haven't done you yet either, Secret Bob. So you know, I
and
we're
never going to. But thanks for asking.
Okay. Well, maybe my students can get on your Facebook page and request an interview. But and
oh, you suck.
No, it's all based on your thing. If you want to do one, great. If not, I respect that totally. But yeah, it was a fun show. There's going to be more great guests on the Seika Network. There's going to be more great shows, I meant to say, on the Seika Network, and more great guests on our show. We're still kind of planning on who's going to be on for the next few weeks. So keep your eyes peeled on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, and you'll see who we're going to have for upcoming guests. So, wow, pretty fun. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thank you, Bob, for being such a great interview host.
Oh, thank you. I had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, we will see everyone next week. Bye, everyone. Have a great day now.